This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. And today on the show, we are going to visit with a couple of experts who are helping us to create safer communities. Melanie Feierstein is the Director of Prevention Education with the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center in Fargo. Melanie, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
And Greg Lemke is the Education Coordinator with the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center. Greg, thank you for joining me.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
And you are also a former Fargo Police Lieutenant.
That's correct.
There is a training coming up on June 12th in Fargo, and it is a bystander training program. And the first question that the brochure about this training asks is, what is your green dot? So we should start there. What is the Green Dot program?
Okay. So the Green Dot program is a national program that focuses on bystander intervention, primary prevention. And we have a committee in town that's called the COE, which is Changing Our Environment Committee. And it's been around since, I think, 2012. And it's made up of people throughout the community. It's individuals. It's people from various businesses, organizations, higher ed. And the focus is primary prevention. And so about 2 years ago, I think, roughly, we decided as a group to adopt the Green Dot program. And so Green Dot, again, is a program that has a school focus, it has a community focus, and a higher ed focus. And we decided to go with the community focus at this time. And it's a program, again, that it focuses on the prevention, the intervention by bystanders, recognizing situations, recognizing the barriers that we all have. And then it gives the three D's. It's direct, delegate, and distract. And so the bystander, what we have done is we started focus groups. We've had about six focus groups. And then we do some overviews, and we go into the bystander trainings. And so this is our first one on June 12th. And it's an all-day training for people from the community. Mm-hmm. And then we also have targeted areas, target groups that we hope to get some bystander training for them also.
So how do the trainings work?
How do they work?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the people who are going to do the instructing are trained by Green Dot. Mm-hmm. They were here, I think, last May. They sent people here, and we had about a dozen, 12 to 15 people who went through the training. So there is a curriculum that is set up. And so what it is it talks about recognizing the situations. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of recognizing situations because we talk about preventing violence. So it's not just – and abuse. It's not just like seeing it happen and then step in and do something. It's being able to recognize a situation. So some of the trainings, there's videos, there's things like we're focusing on bars. So for instance, you may be in a bar and you see somebody who keeps buying someone drinks and they're not drinking them and they have like two or three drinks in front of them now. It's like, this doesn't look good, you know, so what can I do? How can I intervene? Mm-hmm. So it's teaching people to recognize the situations. It's teaching them then how they can intervene, understanding their barriers because not everything's going to work for everybody. And then it's practicing. So it's a lot of talking about barriers, practicing those, the training. Mm-hmm. Identifying the three D's, working through that. Mm-hmm. That's what the training really focuses on.
Well, and there's this really interesting psychological phenomenon of the bystander effect is that when you're in a group and you see something happen, this very famously happened in a murder in 1964 with, I believe the name is Kitty Genovese, and she was stabbed brutally. She screamed. Mm-hmm. Her neighbors heard this happen and nothing happened. And a lot of the neighbors say they thought someone else
right.
would do it.
Absolutely. And that's what the curriculum and the training focuses on. And really thinking about, you know, asking yourself to check in with yourself maybe a second time and say, okay, is something not right here? And again, like Greg had said, recognizing your barriers. What are those barriers? Do you not want to be the one to speak out because you think that maybe you might be the heavy in the situation? But more oftentimes than not, what we find out is that most people are not okay with that situation. It just takes that one person to stand up mm-hmm. or that collective of people to stand up together because most people are uncomfortable if they see something that they know just isn't right or doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's talk about some of the signs, though, because it seems very obvious if somebody grabs somebody by the hair and pull them out the room, that's an immediate sign
sure.
of abuse and violence. But as you travel around airports, especially, you see these signs and at bus stations, and they're kind of cueing people to look for the more subtle signs
right.
of domestic violence and of sexual violence. What are some of those signs?
You know, like Greg had said, maybe, for example, if you're at a bar, you see somebody over-serving or over-buying for somebody and continually giving them drinks, secluding them, isolating them from their friends, putting them in a corner, taking them into a different room. Mm-hmm. When they're heavily intoxicated. What are some other ones, Greg, do you?
Well, even like speaking of bars again, like on the dance floor, you know, approaching somebody, touching somebody, kind of grinding on somebody on the dance floor, and you can tell from the other person's body language that they're just not interested, but they don't know what to do, or they mm-hmm. you know, aren't able to get that person away. And a lot of what we talk about, too, is there are little things that you can do. It doesn't have to be a major thing that you do to intervene. It's asking someone if they're okay. It's asking, you know, going up to somebody in that situation and saying, didn't I go to school with you? It's just, it's stopping it from happening at the moment.
Right. Or causing mm-hmm. a distraction,
right.
you know, making
yeah.
a loud noise or spilling something or just any little thing that can diffuse that situation in an instant can mm-hmm. be helpful
sure.
and prevent something from happening further.
And we have people on the Changing Our Environment Committee who report every month our green dots. And so we've had a number of people already that have given us situations that they've recognized in town, whether it's at the mall, whether it's walking downtown, where they have done some of the intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have some of those examples where they just see people, maybe somebody looks like they're uncomfortable and somebody might be being loud with them or something, just going up to that simply and saying, you know, I'm lost. Do you know where Casey's is or whatever? You know, it's just, again, it's that brief moment to try and stop what's happening,
sure.
you know, in that situation.
Right. There's one kind of a momentum
yeah,
that you can crush.
Right, right. But one of the things we do always stress is that don't do anything that makes you feel unsafe, you know, because the delegate is the one where you tell somebody else. If you're at the bar, you tell the manager, you tell the security person. Certain situations, you may want to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want people to ever do anything not only that they're uncomfortable with, but we don't want them to put their safety in jeopardy.
Sure. Are there certain communities of people that are more at risk, and is that training aimed for those communities? I'm thinking within the LGBTQ community, the college populations, Indigenous women in particular. What are some of the extra threatened groups?
Well, our focus, again, because the city is a large area, so it'd be mm-hmm. difficult for us to say we're going to do this all in Fargo right away. So we picked downtown
mm-hmm.
because just looking at some data, first of all, too, that you could see that there, when there's some sexual assault or there's some other violence that takes place, downtown, you know, it's a safe area, but it happens. And a lot of the alcohol is connected to that. So we decided to focus on downtown. So we're working on establishments that serve alcohol. We are targeting people who live downtown and college students. We've done a couple of focus groups at NDSU because they work downtown. Some of them live downtown. The campus is downtown. And then we are also one of our target groups is underserved populations. And that we have specifically said the LGBTQ community, homeless community, and Native American.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are trying to focus on some of those people who might be a little more vulnerable to maybe, you know, get them some training or at least people to recognize, too, that they may be a little more vulnerable in certain situations.
Are there efforts to do this statewide, the bystander training program?
There are, actually. We're working with the Department of Health, and they're looking at this green dot is being adopted in Valley City as well as Grand Forks, and now Bismarck mm-hmm. is looking at it, and really looking at a statewide strategy to be able to end violence before it happens. Another thing that I think is really interesting about Green Dot, and they ask about when you're talking about the primary prevention piece, is when somebody comes into your community, how do they know that you do not tolerate violence? How do they know that you are a safe place to be? If they walk into your establishment, how do they know they're going to be safe? And that's something that we also will be working on locally and through the state level as well.
Sure. How much does the training cost?
The training that we're doing costs nothing for the people to come. There's no charge for us to do a focus group. There's no charge for us to do an overview or the bystander training.
Okay.
No cost. Funding comes through the federal government, I believe. Mm-hmm. CDC is involved, North Dakota Health Department. So there's funding there, but mm-hmm. we don't charge anybody for the training.
Okay.
The supplies, there's no workbooks or anything, so we supply everything.
And the training is on June 12th from 9 to 4. Where is it at?
It's being held at the YWCA, their homeless shelter on 30th, I think, 30th and University, South University.
Okay, in South Fargo.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
How many people are you anticipating?
I was just saying that we have 23.
Okay.
We were limiting it to 30. So other areas have said they've got 10 to 15 for the first one. So we're happy with 23, and then hopefully the word gets out there. And then we do have one of the local establishments, bar downtown, that does want us to come in and do a shortened version of it for their staff. So we're working on a date for that.
Well, yeah, I wonder, could this be wrapped into a different kind of training program? Like, you know, police officers are trained mm-hmm. for certain things. First responders are trained. Does it make sense to have certain entire professions trained mm-hmm. in bystander?
You know, I would say yes, and that's the ultimate goal. I mean, it would be certainly wonderful if this type of training could be incorporated into when staff are onboarded servers. For example, if we're looking at, bar restaurant establishments, if that could just be a part of their training, that would be wonderful. Business owners, you know, their staff that come on board, again, that would be the ultimate goal.
What are some of the other needs at the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center?
Oh, boy. You know, there's always needs. We serve close to 3,000 people a year, over 500 of those being children. And so, we are embedded in all of the school systems in the area, in a lot of the formal systems. We are a busy group. We are very connected in the community. And so I think, we love volunteers. We love to have people come, not only to do things such as childcare or to help keep the agency looking nice or helping out with our special events. There's all sorts of different things that volunteers could do that we absolutely love. We love our volunteers, and we're always looking for more.
You said you serve 3,000 people a year. Do you see those numbers fluctuate? Are they going up? Are they going down? Do they change throughout the year?
They're typically going up. I think the further our reach is, the more people know about us, the more people know about our services, and that they're confidential, they're free of charge. We meet people where they're at, whatever they need in their life. We do not determine their service. They determine their service. I think the more that people recognize that and understand that in the community, the more they're able to reach out, mm-hmm. And then we can provide them with that service.
And I think we did education training for over 20,000.
Over 20,000.
Close to 25,000 people last mm-hmm. year. That includes mm-hmm. schools, and then we also will go to other agencies, businesses will have us come in and talk about harassment, sexual harassment. We did some bystander training for the Fargo Library staff. So
everywhere.
We can kind of do it all, yeah.
We're
just
everywhere.
Get a hold of us. And
so any little bit helps.
Yeah.
We're visiting with Melanie Feierstein. She is the Director of Prevention Education at the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center in Fargo, and Greg Lemke, the Education Coordinator, also with the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center, about the upcoming Green Dot Bystander Training Program to Prevent Violence. This is going to be June 12th at the YWCA in South Fargo from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Greg, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Melanie, thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
More Main Street in a moment.
Support for this program is provided by North Dakota Horizons, North Dakota's state magazine, showcasing North Dakota's quality of place, its abundant resources, and people. Learn more on Facebook and at ndhorizons.com.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Fenton Dooley is a land and mineral rights attorney. He's also a member of the Salted Lands Council, which is concerned about land damaged by brine ponds and spills that can occur in conjunction with oil and gas development. We share an excerpt of his visit with host John Harris on a recent Prairie Pulse television episode.
What kind of damage does salt do?
The brines in the Williston Basin, which is the larger formation than the Bakken, the brines in the Williston Formation are 10 times saltier than seawater, 10 times. So it'll kill everything. And the only way you can get life back into the soil is to dilute it. You've got to dilute it. So that means that you've got to wash the soil, and then you've got to replace some of the soil components that are missing. Calcium, for one. And what we have in North Dakota is basically two different oil patches. We have the conventional oil patch where the well went into straight up and down like a straw in your formation. And then we have the unconventional. The unconventional is recent. Everybody knows it as fracking. And it's a different culture. The fracking industry is under the whole world is watching. Remember that one? The old anti-war expression, the whole world is watching. So the fracking industry, at least in the Williston Basin, that means Montana, North Dakota, and a couple provinces in Canada, is accustomed to being watched. And there's a different culture there. There's an expectation that we've got to do it right. And God bless Harold Hamm for bringing it on. But before he came, back in the 50s when I was a little boy in Belfield, North Dakota, my father noticed my interest in farming and ranching and machines, and I started visiting the conventional oil wells near Freiburg. And as a consequence of coming into the state and either preying upon the ignorance of our public officials or their willingness to look the other way, we have salt pits all over the state, thousands and thousands of them, and we really don't even know where they all are. Ground zero is Bottineau County, Renville County, and it overlaps a little bit into Ward County. So what that means is that based upon lack of governance in the with the advent in the late 50s and it continued way into the late 70s, we were dumping salt brines into pits, and they call them evaporation pits. A lie. They were percolation pits. And salt, sodium chloride, penetrates clay. These pits are leaching into the depths, that's vertically, and they're leaching laterally. And in the areas of very intense original first-generation oil development, we have overlapping zones. There are some fields in Bottineau County where virtually there's no farming left. The farming that goes on there is pretentious. It's actually being accomplished for show. And wells are being pumped for show to maintain control of the formation and avoid the cost of cleanup. So ground zero for the old oil fields is Bottineau County.
When there is damage, you can do something about it, but I assume it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time.
Well, some people talk about this as a geological problem. At 74, I'm not content with a geological solution. So the real truth is that we've got to do what is called a phase one, phase two, and phase three response to this. Phase one means to go out and look at it and see what you got and list your concerns. List them. And phase two means go out and do testing. And phase three means to get at it. You do enough testing, you know how deep you got to dig, how wide you got to go. And in the oil patch, you got to dig it up, you got to wash it, and you got to add calcium. And there are many other things you got to do to bring life to the soil, because our soil is full of little microbes which are killed by salt, actually killed. It's sterile soil. In Oklahoma, where Harold Hamm's from, they call it dead soil. So what we need is a Jesus to resurrect this. Our scientists are going to have to be resurrecting soil. Mm. And it can be done. It takes a lot of water to do it. It takes disposal wells to do it. And for those people who don't like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it's going to take their permission, too. Because in many situations, especially Bottineau County, the only place you're going to get water to wash the soil is the wetland that many of these farmers resent anyway.
Yeah. Are there no federal regulations that govern this kind of thing? And
well, as you might know, the feds aren't very welcome out here. You know, their money's welcome, but not the regulation. So about the only time that there's an engagement of the federal government in one of these affairs is when the salt is going into a navigable stream. You know, the waters of the United States of Obama failed. So a situation in Charbonneau Creek, which is west of Watford City, the cows came home one day. They wouldn't drink the water. And this lady was wondering, why are cows bellowing? There's a great big pond. And she went down there and looked, and there were dead turtles. Everything was dead. So what has happened is that disposal wells had leaked in and killed this pond. And so the federal were involved there because Charbonneau Creek flows into Yellowstone. There's another instance which has been a huge federal involvement, Blacktail Creek, that'll be east and a little bit north of Williston. That was impinging upon Lake Sacagawea. And then, of course, there's the great blunder up north of Tioga, which probably cost $80 million to clean up. And that was impacting upon federal waters. Hmm.
Is the state doing anything legislatively and on this? And in the last, most recent session, did anything happen?
The state of North Dakota has prostituted itself to the oil industry. The state of North Dakota did that first in the 50s, and it's doing it today. And I will say, on the other hand, that we have a governor now who doesn't need the contributions of the oil industry, and he is listening. And I will also say that Rick Wardner, the head of the Senate, is very concerned about reclamation. So we have some hope. We have some hope. But I think it's really true to say that the Oil and Gas Division and the Health Department and the Public Service Commission and the Game and Fish Division represent fracking in state government. What we have are multiple jurisdictions that I just listed in the state, and I didn't even mention the primary trustee, the Water Commission, which doesn't want to be a trustee, even though they are, according to the United Plainsmen case of 1976. So I've just spoken to you about the fracture of jurisdictions in state government, and then welcome in the EPA, the Game and Fish Department, the U.S. Geological Services. So what we have is a whole bunch of folks who don't have the potency to do anything in a coordinated way, or they don't want to, or the agency has been captured. In the law, you talk about an agency being captured by the enterprise it's supposed to control. So what we have are ineffectual units of government on the federal and state level. Hmm. Absolutely ineffectual. Well, maybe not absolutely, just a notch back.
Okay. Well, you talked about you can do some cleanup, but if you do salt cleanup, who pays for it?
Well,
and I assume it's expensive.
Thank God for a legacy fund, because we need it all. Publicly speaking, it appears to be about $6 billion, and a public gadfly here thinks we probably got another $2 million. We'll probably need it all. If we're going to do a responsible job of remediating salted lands, which is befouled by the lack of attention or astuteness of our state government, we'll probably need it all.
Mm-hmm. Ben, I'm sorry, we're out of time. If people want more information, where can they go?
Well, we have a website, www.saltedlands.org.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have, Dave. Ben, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
That was Fintan Dooley, a land and mineral rights attorney and member of the Salted Lands Council, which is concerned about land damage that can happen with oil and gas extraction, visiting with John Harris. Prairie Pulse airs Fridays at 7:30 Central and 6:30 Mountain, and shows are archived on our YouTube channel. Coming up on this Friday's episode, John Harris visits with Joseph McNeil Jr. about his development work on the Standing Rock Reservation. Still to come on Main Street, we hear about an internet privacy bill, but now it's time for the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. The Department of Human Services is being asked to give periodic reports to the legislature's Interim Human Services Committee on the status of the state's takeover of county social services, as well as the establishment of human service zones. Carrington Republican Representative Chet Pollard chairs the Legislative Management Committee, which picks the interim studies and chooses the members of the interim committees.
And I think it's appropriate that we as legislators know how that consolidation and takeover from the DHS perspective is going so that we get updates. I think that's important. We just want to make sure that all the local political subdivisions that are involved in this, that everything is going smoothly. That's what we need to find out.
The legislature authorized the creation of up to 19 human service zones. Some people employed by county social service offices will become state employees. The CEO of the UND Energy and Environmental Research Center will become the leader of the new State Energy Research Center of North Dakota. Tom Erickson has served as the head of the EERC for the past 5 years. The new research center was created by the 2019 legislature, and lawmakers are funding it at $5 million for the biennium. Erickson says he sees the new center as being a tremendous opportunity for North Dakota. He says there are already 3 great research programs at the EERC focusing on lignite, oil and gas, and renewables. But he says those are focused on applied research, that is, research that is nearing commercial stage. And the new program?
This funding is really about very early stage, new ideas, new concepts. This funding is focused on things that can make a difference 5, 10, 15 years out. And so it's a chance for our researchers to dream a little bit, to focus on the ideas that they've had for a long time but weren't able to find funding for because they were too early stage. And so now we get to take that opportunity to do it and to basically show the state of North Dakota what we can do for them moving forward.
Erickson will keep both jobs until the EERC can find a new CEO. And it's called All of Us. It's a research program being conducted by the National Institute of Health. The All of Us trailers are set up in Fargo through Friday. Mel Lopez is tour manager for All of Us research program. She says the volunteer-driven program focuses on precision medicine. Lopez says, well, it's not a new concept. The research is aimed at making healthcare a personalized experience.
A perfect example are glasses. The glasses your prescriptions made for you as an individual. They're not made for everyone else. So why is it that when you go to the clinic or the hospital, you get the same treatment as everyone when you're not like everyone else?
Lopez says the program looks at your lifestyle, the environment you live in, and your genetics. She says security and anonymity are key elements for the volunteers.
Many protocols have been put into place for your security. This program was approved in 2015. It's taken this long for it to launch, just so that everybody can be on the same page, so that the security can be ready in place, the servers, everything.
The All of Us program will run over the course of the next 10 years. Lopez says volunteers can stay in the program as long as they like. In order to participate, a person needs a valid phone number or email address and be a resident of the United States. Persons interested in signing up can visit the All of Us trailer set up at Sanford South Point Clinic in South Fargo or by visiting the group's website at joinallofus.org/drive. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Internet privacy is a major concern. Republican Jim Casper serves in the State House representing District 46. He's one of the sponsors on House Bill 1485, which we learn more about in this conversation with Doug Hamilton, as Casper shares how his work in the insurance and retirement planning industry got him interested in internet privacy.
And back in 2001, my first session, Graham Leach Bliley, the federal law that deregulated the insurance, securities, and banking industry, had passed in 1999. And so the Bankers Association brought a bill in the 2001 session to allow to amend North Dakota law to allow the banks to share the customer's confidential information with their insurance and securities agencies without the prior consent of the customer. And you know,
so that's
ironically,
a great convenience for them, but maybe inconvenient to some customers.
Well, it's not only inconvenience; it really is sort of unfair competition to the private insurance agents in the state of North Dakota. And most importantly, there could be, and I'm not saying there was, but there could be undue influence on that person that does banking. And so up until the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, the federal law required that no banks, no insurance companies, no securities companies could own each other's stock or sell each other's products. And then in 1999, Phil Gramm, Republican from Texas, unfortunately, introduced the bill with a couple of other co-sponsors. And it tore down the barriers, which allowed those financial services industries to own each other's companies, share each other's products, sell each other's products, and do all kinds of things that they couldn't do in the past.
So this kind of opens the floodgates? Because if one industry can do it, others can do it?
Well, it's the financial services industry that now it's sort of the Wild West. Because up until that point in time, you had good regulation for banks, good regulation for securities, good regulation for insurance, and they were all separate. Now it opens it up. The banking industry in 1989 had introduced legislation to prohibit the banks from sharing a customer's information with their insurance affiliates. In North Dakota, we've had banks such as Wells Fargo who owned insurance agencies going back into the 50s and 60s. So they were grandfathered. But the bank said, we don't want the customer's information to be shared unless the customer consents in advance. And that law was in effect. And then the banks came in 2001 and said, we need to change it. And being I'm in that industry, when it passed the Senate 47-0, came to the House Industry, Business, and Labor Committee, and I about fell off my chair when I read the bill. And so I talked to the chairman of our committee, Representative Rick Berg, who is from Fargo, and said, I got to try to kill this bill and explain to him. He said, I'll give you time. Go ahead and try. Well, long story short, I was unsuccessful to kill the bill. And then in 2002, we had something called a referral. Everybody knows about that. I was part of the referral committee. I generally don't know if I like referrals, but in this particular case, I did. And I actually was on that committee with Heidi Heitkamp. So we had conservatives, liberals, in-betweens, because it was a matter of privacy, protection of our data. And that's really a nonpartisan issue, I believe. And so we put together a committee, worked on it, and we threw out the law by about a 76% vote. So the people of North Dakota says, we want our privacy protected. And it was, and it still is to this day in the financial services industry in North Dakota. So now we begin talking about Facebook and Google and Amazon and all those companies. And some issues came up in the newspaper about the European Union had passed legislation effective in May of 2018 that said all these tech companies that are gathering information and profiling people, which goes back 20, 30 years, as long as the internet has been around, and they said, the people in the European Union are going to be protected. These companies have got to allow their citizens to look at their information that they have gathered. They have to allow the customer to change any inaccuracies. And they even have to allow the customer to ask the data to be deleted except to provide the services that they've asked for the company to provide for them and not share or sell their data to other marketing entities and other internet companies, which is being done every second of every day, 24 hours, 7. And so I said, I'm going to get a bill passed like that. And so I worked with a senator from Washington State, Reuven Carlisle, a liberal Democrat and a conservative Republican. I contacted his office, and he shared information about his bill that he had drafted based upon the European model. And so I drafted my bill based upon the Washington and the European model and introduced it.
Well, in a May 28th story here by our news director, Dave Thompson, he quoted you as saying that a year or so ago I bought some ties online. Within hours, I had two other offers of ties from other companies. We have all had this experience if we've been online.
Absolutely. It goes on every day.
And so it is startling to realize that these kinds of activities, if you walked into a tie store, it's not like the tie store across the block would know that unless they were watching you.
Correct.
So there is a privacy issue here, but what can the state do? Because obviously we have interstate issues here online, and we have countries. You mentioned the European Union. Is this a global enforcement issue?
Well, it's not a global enforcement issue, but it's an issue that the state of North Dakota can step in and regulate. The California has already passed a similar legislation to the European model, although they're working on amending it because they missed some areas. And we can actually protect the citizens of North Dakota by giving them the opportunity to look at their data on that is gathered by all these companies. Now, interesting, I don't want to forget this. Microsoft, who has a huge office here in Fargo, supported my bill. They brought their government affairs people from Seattle to testify in support of my bill and been very helpful because they believe that this is an issue of consumer confidence and consumer protection of their data and their information that needs to be addressed by the companies who are using the Internet and gathering and profiling the people. So they're very supportive, and I really appreciated that. They really were helpful, although we did get the study out of it, but the lobbyists came in from all over the United States, Doug, and it was, the sky is falling. You know, you got to give us time. My bill actually had a two-year delayed effective date. So we were going to give 2 years to study it, 2 years for them to come and make their case about how it needs to be modified. But I pointed out to them, you're already complying in Europe. There's 500 million citizens in Europe that have this type of protection, but the state of North Dakota and our citizens don't. Why not?
Well, have you talked to the state of North Dakota's congressional delegation? Because maybe this should be a federal issue.
You know, Doug, you and I both know what we have out in Congress right now. We have a bunch of people in the House and the Senate that
don't talk
that
to
are
each other.
their shadow, don't talk to each other, yeah. Make all kinds of crazy accusations, and aren't doing the people's business. So the federal government has been encouraged for a number of years to take action, and they have not. And so there's about eight or nine states now across the United States that are looking at similar legislation along, you know, some area of being done or not.
What do you hope to accomplish during this interim study period? How are you going to conduct this?
Well, it has been assigned to the Judiciary Committee. I've applied to be on the Judiciary Committee, and the lobbyists, as I said, came in from all over the country, and they said they would participate if we had a study. So we did pass the mandatory study, and it will be studied. So they can come and they can make their case about what the bill should look like, because sooner or later we're going to pass legislation like this. We've got the next year and a half to look at it and make their case. I think at the end of the next interim, the committee hopefully will draft a bill along the lines that I had and any updates that have occurred now over the last 2 years as we get to that point, but make their case and what they're concerned about. My concern, and I think the concern of most people in the state of North Dakota, when you have these hackers hacking all kinds of companies, you know, all the large companies, we just read about something where 900 million customers' records have been potentially hacked over the last week or two or three. And it happens every week or every month we're hearing another major hack. We've got to protect the citizens of North Dakota's information. You could be stolen blind. You could lose your home. You could all kinds of things. And the profiles that they've developed on everyone is so insidious. They watch us on the telephone. They watch us on the Internet. They watch us on TV. Everything we're doing, that's electronic through the Internet and other sources of electronics, they're gathering, they're capturing, they're profiling, and they're marketing it.
And we need to be distinct here. I mean, there's illegal hacking, which is, you know, the Russian interference with elections, or for that matter, spoofing and phishing and all that kind of stuff that goes on with online activity. But these are legitimate companies that are using our data for very specific marketing reasons, and we may not be comfortable with that.
Well, absolutely not. I believe the citizens of our state need to have the opportunity to know what's going on. Everybody should be able to look at their profile by Amazon, by Google, by Facebook, by you name it. They're all doing it. AT&T, Verizon, they all have profiles on us, and they're marketing. It was written in the month of December of last year that there was $50 billion of profit made by the marketing of people's personal information. Well, the question then arises is, who owns that information? Does the marketing company, the technology company, own it once they get it? Or is it our information? I believe it's a property right. I believe our information is ours, and we ought to be able to say what can or cannot, our information can or cannot be used.
Now, in Dave's story on May 28th, he cited you as saying there was a constitutional ownership right. Develop that idea for us.
Well, we have property rights under the Bill of Rights, and it very clearly delineates that our property is ours. It cannot be taken without due process. We have the right to know what it is. We have the right to appeal any ruling against us. We have a right to go to court if someone tries to take our property. We have the right to protect the stuff that we own. I believe that our data is a property, just like when you own your car, or you own your home, or you own your pair of shoes or your ties. Well,
you mentioned these laws that have been passed by the European Union and these models in other states in our country. Is it possible to put the genie back in the bottle? How does this actually work if an internet company like Google or Amazon or somebody has to come back to us and say, is it okay for us to use this data this way?
Well, the genie is out of the bottle. That's the unfortunate thing. They do have the data, but the bill would have provided that if a customer contacted them. The first thing is the bill required that the citizens be notified in a very clear, understandable way that this information is being gathered. One or two pages. You look at, you know, when you sign up for a service, and we've all done it, before you can get the service, there's a little box that shows up and said, this is our privacy method. Please check the box if you want our service.
Yeah.
Well,
but
everybody checks it and nobody reads it.
Exactly. But reading it is a real exercise in patience and legalese.
Well, not only that, people do not want to spend the time. They want the service.
So should it be the other way? I mean, is there a better way to gather this information and to get approval to use it than checking a box because you don't want to read, you know, 30 pages of agate type?
Well, what my bill said is that each individual who has a service from any of the companies would receive a clear, either by mail or by email, notice that we're letting you know that we have gathered your information, and if you'd like to look at your file, here's the way to do it.
Oh, so that's the difference there.
Yes.
You could actually see the data.
Oh, absolutely. They have to show you your file that they've gathered, simply like a credit report. You can get a report of your credit from the three credit reporting agencies. This would have been the same concept. And once you look at your file, that is yours, you can say, oh, my gosh, this is totally incorrect, or I didn't know they were doing this, or here are some errors, and you could provide a correction for that file and require that company to correct any errors. You could also require them to delete your file except for the use of the services that you're asking to get from them. And they could not deny the services of what you've required, you know, for the internet or for Facebook. But they could not share it if you did not want it shared.
Now, are you aware of, do you know whether the state of North Dakota applies any of these marketing practices to its online activities? I'm thinking of tourism, for example.
Doug, the state of North Dakota is in the same boat as a lot of these other tech companies. The data is being sold and shared all over the place, from the driver's license files to other files. It's available.
Well, a week or so before Dave filed that story about you and the mandatory interim study to look at internet privacy and security, and that was May 28th. On May 20th, Dave filed a story headlined, North Dakota Student Association is writing a Student Data Privacy and Security Bill of Rights. Have you been talking with Jared Melville, the Student Association president?
I have. In fact, he testified in support of my bill during the legislature. Chancellor Hagerup and the North Dakota Higher Education Office just got done sponsoring a seminar on May 15th out of Bismarck State College, which I was asked to be a participant, and Jared was there to present. Here's how insidious this is for our young people. When you're young, sometimes you do foolish things on the internet and you send stuff out that, you know, when you get a little bit older, a little bit wiser, you might say, why did I do that? Or somebody might say something about you that becomes a record in your file. We're being told that as an example, a college graduate wants to go to work for the CIA or the FBI or some high security.
They're going to check your social media.
That's right. They're going to check the social media. And if there's things on there that the person doesn't know about or might be a little bit ashamed of, it could eliminate them from jobs and career opportunities. Now, obviously, if there's bad characters out there, that needs to be known to a potential employer. But this could be things that it was just plain foolishness or not even known that that is a record, or something that was done 15 years ago that should have been expunged from the record, and your record maybe is. But it haunts you for life when it's out there. So people have to have their data protected. Our college students and our young people, they're developing profiles that they need to be aware of and know what it's all about.
Now, we've been talking about these legitimate companies and their questionable use of our data. And you mentioned earlier the issue of hacking. And the North Dakota University system has had experience with hacking. I suspect North Dakota's government has as well with its online activities. So are there protections that are in place now or that should be improved or can be enhanced? Because everybody's afraid of hacking.
Well, Doug, I've gotten to know a gentleman named Sean Riley, who's the new head of the IT department for the state of North Dakota. He comes from the private sector. He worked at Mayo Clinic in their data protection before he came here in North Dakota. He's a brilliant man, and he is charged with totally redoing the protection for the data that is being gathered by the state of North Dakota in all the agencies, the subsidiaries that we have out there now. He tells me, and he's testified, that our protection for privacy and hacking has a lot to be desired, and we have a lot to do to change our systems. We're operating on some computer systems and programming that goes back into the 90s and 2000s, and there's hundreds of different types of software out there. We should have a coordinated system for the whole state of North Dakota that you can protect with the right type of hacking security.
Well, you mentioned that some of these things are old. They've been around for a while, and maybe it's a penny wise, pound foolish kind of issue here. Maybe we should be investing more in this area to protect the citizens of North Dakota.
We absolutely have to, and we're spending a whole lot more money than if we had an integrated system. You know, to do the upfront integration and bring in a whole bunch of new software is a big investment. We're starting along that track, but the cost to these various for the state of North Dakota and the taxpayers to update software that's 20 years old is huge. Some of it is not even being updated anymore. The company may be out of business, or they can't update it because they've gone on to new things. So we have a lot of work to do in North Dakota, and unfortunately we have Sean Riley there who's working on it, and I know the governor Governor Burgum is very involved in the same area.
He has deep background in internet and software and all that stuff.
You bet.
Well, in the meantime, do you have advice for North Dakota residents and consumers about dealing with online marketing?
Well, there's nothing we can do at this point in time about receiving online marketing offers. Whatever the we receive, we're going to continue to receive it. But you can be very cautious on providing a personal information on the telephone, on the internet. You know, sometimes the offer sounds really good, and it's a scam that they're trying to get your personal information to take out of your bank account or your credit cards. In many cases, there's scams around the United States where they're putting mortgages on people's homes, changing the title, and looking like they own it, and they steal the homes, taking money out of your checking account, your savings account. So people have to be very, very cautious and not give out their personal information unless they know the people that they're giving it out to.
And, of course, these days, it's not like we go to the bank and we have that one relationship with a bank. It's online.
Yeah,
and our retirement plans are online.
We have a relationship with our computer online. Yeah, and it's the personal relationships have fast deteriorated, unfortunately, in my opinion.
So let the buyer beware.
Well, beware and be smart.
Okay. And in 2021, when the legislature convenes again, you predict there will be a bill waiting?
Well, if I'm reelected, and I'm up for reelection in 2020, if I'm reelected, I can assure you there will be a bill. And if I'm not reelected, I'm sure someone will take up the mantle, but I know something has to be done. The people in North Dakota need the protection, and I know they want the protection. I had hundreds of emails from people saying, thank you for doing what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Well, thanks for spending some time with our listeners today.
Well, thanks for having me, Doug. It's a pleasure, and I know the people in North Dakota are smart, and now they have to beware and be careful.
That was Doug Hamilton visiting with State Representative Jim Casper, a Republican representing District 46. Dakota Datebook is next.
Prairie Public is proud to present the live storytelling event, The Moth, November 14th at the Fargo Theater. Tickets available now at Tickets 300 or online at jadepresents.com.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 11th. North Dakota remembers Theodore Roosevelt, 100 years after his passing, featuring the words of Roosevelt as performed by Steve Stark. Theodore Roosevelt was the product of a loving, supportive family, influencing his entire life. TR's record of social concern, the American people, ethical standards, honesty, scholarship, and the safeguarding of our national resources are incomparable hallmarks of his life, Passions and Presidency.
My father, Theodore Roosevelt Sr., was the best man I ever knew. He combined strength and courage with gentleness, tenderness, and great unselfishness. He would not tolerate in us children selfishness or cruelty, idleness, cowardice, or untruthfulness. The same standard of clean living was demanded for the boys as for the girls, with great love and patience and the most understanding sympathy and consideration. He combined insistence on discipline. I never knew anyone who got greater joy out of living than did my father, or anyone who more wholeheartedly performed every duty. He was interested in every social reform movement, and he did an immense amount of practical charitable work himself. My mother was a sweet, gracious, beautiful Southern woman, a delightful companion and beloved by everyone. She was also blessed with a strong sense of humor. Her mother, my grandmother, one of the dearest old ladies, lived with us and was distinctly overindulgent to us children, being quite unable to harden her heart toward us, even when occasion demanded it. I was a sickly and delicate little boy, suffered much from asthma, and frequently had to be taken away on trips to find a place where I could breathe. One of my memories is sitting up in my bed, gasping with my mother and father trying to help me. I never grew to have keen powers of observation. Quite unknown to myself, I was, while a boy, under a hopeless disadvantage in studying nature. I was very nearsighted, so that the only things I could study were those I ran up against or stumbled over. I spoke of this to my father, and soon afterwards got my first pair of spectacles, which literally opened an entire new world to me. I had no idea how beautiful the world was until I got those spectacles.
Today's Dakota Datebook was written and performed by Steve Stark. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the Historical Society of North Dakota. This series with funding from the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation.
That's it for this Tuesday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, with a first-of-its-kind program in the state, you can now major in medicinal plants. Minot State University has a new option for chemistry majors, and we learn more about it from Professor Christopher Heth. Also tomorrow, Capital Pride is coming to Bismarck, and we share an episode of the Breaking Barriers podcast. That's tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.